بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Hazrat Sufyan Thawri Rahmatullah Alayh is a contemporary of Hazrat Imam Abu Hanifa Rahmatullah Alayh, leading muhaddis and for some period he was amongst the imams of fiqh as well, as you have Abu Hanifa, Imam Shafi, rahmatullahi alayh. Then he was an imam in fiqh as well. Allah Ta'ala had it, and though there were many imams of fiqh, but just the mazhabs of the four imams continued, and the rest of it all subsided, all terminated. Like we have hadith, and many people have written kitabs on hadith. Then many of them had just terminated, and just five or six kitabs became more popular. So the same happened in fiqh as well, that though there were other imams as well who had prepared kitabs on fiqh, like Sufyan Thawri, Imam Uzai, etc., they had all prepared something, but it lasted for some period and thereafter it terminated. So Sufyan Thawri rahmatullah was a very great and leading muhaddis, all quoting Imam Bukhari, Imam Muslim, everybody quoting. And he's in a golden period of fiqh, in the period of Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullah alayhi. So he says, what is the procedure in ilm? What is that procedure and what is the system that you follow in ilm? It is man's nature that he wants to explore things that he doesn't know. That's man's nature. What you don't know, you are curious to know, you want to know, you want to explore, right? So this nature of man cannot be eliminated. But then, ilm is such a thing that you just go and explore on your own, then the consequences can be disastrous. So you follow the procedure, inshallah, you will come to the end, and you will come to the end comfortably. There was one person who wanted to manufacture bombs. So he went and checked up in the internet what he must do. So he went and put the things together. And when he went to put the things together, then the thing detonated and it killed him. He was destroyed in the process. So his intentions were good. He wanted to explore. He wanted to know, he was curious about the things that he didn't know, but had he only had a guide and a teacher, then this would not have been the result. Now you don't take a guide, you don't take a teacher, you don't have any procedure in you, and then you try and experiment on these things, then this is the unfortunate consequence. So ilm also has a certain sequence, like that bomb took away a person's life because he didn't follow a consequence, he didn't follow a system, so it took away his life. And here you don't follow a system, it may be that you may be robbed of your iman, you may be deprived of your iman because you don't have any system, you don't have any procedure, and you went and looked up the books yourself. We had one case in Spingo. Prominent family woman went to a couple of doctors, and then she went to some hakims, all that, whatever else, and all the medications she went and mixed up. In about 5-6 months, that medication became too serious, and she died. We had it in front of us. She went and administered that medication on her own, taking this medication, listening to that doctor and this hakim and whatever else, and a whole conglomeration, all mixing up everything, and she's going to take it herself. As a result, she died. So this two things happened in front of us. This bomb story also happened before us, and this thing also happened before us. So this may be fatal as far as your life is concerned, but ilm, if there is no procedure and there is no sequence, then forget the life. It may result in your iman going. You lose it. So he says that there is a procedure in ilm. The first step in this procedure is istima, to listen attentively. Istima, to listen attentively. Therefore you see, when the Rasulullah Paak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam would receive wahi, فَاسْتَمِعْ لِمَا يُوحَى, then he would listen attentively. Then he's not engaged with anybody, no talking, and he is totally absorbed in that ilm that he's receiving, that wahi and inspiration that he's receiving, is totally absorbed in that. His mind is not one side or the other, his mind is just absorbed, consumed in that ilm that he is acquiring. So this is the first step. And unfortunately, we have it in this day and time that our students have got so many engagements. They may be sitting there in the class physically and listening to the teacher, but their minds have already been consumed. Someone's mind is consumed in some girlfriend, some may be consumed in other permissible friends, some in literature, some in phones, some in media, some in other things. So what they do give to the teacher is very little compared to how much they have been consumed by other things. What they give to the teacher is very little, very, very little. As a result, what happens now? The mind is not there. Now, it's a small child. Imagine a child, 12 years, 13 years of age, and he's been consumed by some type of friendship, whether it is an illicit relationship, whether it is permissible relationship, but he's consumed in that. When he's consumed in that, and he has to still marry when he's about 20, 21, 22, when he's going to be that age, he's going to be married. Now, for this long duration, he's mentally disturbed. He's mentally not focused. He can't acquire, he cannot absorb, he cannot consume. Or his mind is consumed in something else. He wants the thing to take place, but his mind is consumed. When his mind is consumed, then how can that take place? His mind is stuck in that. And he wants that to happen, the marriage to happen, the nikah to happen. But he started off too early, 12 years, 13 years of age, he started this off. Now he has to wait for about 9 years. And that 9 years is the prime years of his life, his career, that's the prime years. So he may be intelligent, he may be understanding, he may be the best candidate, but then his mind is already consumed. His mind is consumed, so what he gets is very little. So, فَاسْتَمِعْ لِمَا يُوحَى, listen attentively to the revelation that is coming, and listen very, very attentively. You see, great, great luminaries, Hassan ibn Manda is a very great muhaddis of his time. 40 years he spent in just acquiring hadith, manuscripts upon manuscripts, trunks upon trunks, and from country to country, continent to continent, he's traveling with all the kitabs. Sometimes they are taking trunks of kitabs. Now you have to travel, for example, from here to Johannesburg, right? So they got a couple of trunks. Oh, they can carry one trunk at a time. So they got one trunk here and they got one sati here. And one sati is taking the trunks on his back and he's taking it, for example, to Crab City, right? Then he comes back and this sati here, then they carry the rest of it. See, they've got two or three trunks. So the sati that is waiting here, then they take the rest of the trunks. So in that manner, one day passes, 2 days passes, 3 days, a year passes, and they're reaching to Johannesburg, and then they hear what a muhaddis did, and they're acquiring ilm in this manner. But they are acquiring the hadith personally, directly, not just from the books, and how you have it today, just not from the internet, but going personally to the teacher and acquiring it from the presence of the teacher. So this is the pains, this is the difficulty that they had went through to acquire this ilm. And when this changes and you become quite complacent and you feel that taking that knowledge from the book directly is sufficient, then there can be a whole host of problems. I'll explain this repeatedly in numerous discourses. He explains this because perhaps Allah Ta'ala had given him the sight that people in this age now, they will suffice on the internet and they will suffice on looking at the kitabs themselves, rather than referring to ustads and referring to professional people, they will suffice on looking at the kitabs themselves. So he cautioned us in advance. You see, if you are not going to take it from the source, then this is the problem that you're going to land yourself in. So he says, now see this person here. One person is reciting the Quran Sharif, and he's opened the kitab himself, opened the Quran Sharif himself, without the medium of a teacher. Alif Lam Mim, ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا زَيْتَ فِي. Right? Instead of saying لَا رَيْبَ فِي, he says لَا زَيْت. زَيْت means oil. So this is a book wherein there is no oil. Right? So may Allah Ta'ala bless these people that put the nuktas into the Quran Sharif, and those people that had carried the Quran Sharif and passed it on to their students. And their students learnt it, they passed it on to their students, and so forth and so on, so that nobody can make the slightest mistake in the Quran Sharif. If he makes it, then the smallest child can correct him. If the best imam in the world, and he makes the slightest mistake, then the smallest child can correct him, that this is where you have gone off. So crowds and crowds of people have learnt it from their teachers, and they passed it on to their students. Their students perfected it, and they became teachers, and they passed it on to their children, their students thereafter, and so forth and so on. Similarly, one person is reciting the Quran Sharif, and he comes through Surah Yusuf, and he recites, وَجَعَلَ السِّقَايَةَ فِي رِجْلِ أَخِي. Now the word is رَحْلِ أَخِي. Siqaya is a container, and rahl refers to luggage. See, وَجَعَلَ السِّقَايَةَ فِي رَحْلِ أَخِي. So it's a long incident where the Amir had concealed the container into the luggage of the brother. Right. So now he's reciting it, وَجَعَلَ السِّقَايَةَ فِي رِجْلِ أَخِي. He hid away the container in his brother's leg. See, because at that time, in old days, then there wasn't these things like nuktas, you know. So now how are you going to make out whether it is jim? How are you going to make out it's ha? Like in zayt, how are you going to make out it's raib or zayt? Because there's no zabar zer, there's no nuktas. So when there's no zabar zer, there's no nukta, then how are you going to read it correctly? So he read it, وَجَعَلَ السِّقَايَةَ فِي رِجْلِ أَخِي, instead of saying, فِي رَحْلِ أَخِي. So you see the mistakes that you are bound to make. So the importance of acquiring the knowledge in this manner, فَاسْتَمِعْ لِمَا يُحَى. Your mind must be totally in that direction. It mustn't be scattered all over the place. Just in that. And you're acquiring it from your seniors, from your tutors, from your elders, you are acquiring it. So this is the tartib, how you acquire ilm. Making a lot of objections is not a sign that this person is very, very advanced. No. Sometimes people think that no, he's asking a lot of questions, so he's very advanced. Sometimes it is a good sign when a student asks a question, provided it's a good question that he asks. But many a times it is because he's not listening attentively, or he hadn't learned the primary facts properly, therefore he's asking this type of questions. If all the primary things, the basic things were learned correctly, so he wouldn't have made so many questions. But because the primary things weren't asked, weren't corrected, therefore he's asking so many questions. Sometimes he can't think. Sometimes he didn't do the basic things right. Sometimes he can't reason correctly. Imam Abu Yusuf Rahmatullahi had one student. So he told the student, like the other students ask, then you also must present your questions so that we know that you are also progressing. If you remain quiet in the class, then how do we know that you are progressing, you aren't progressing? So he said, yeah, no, I must ask also. Like other students are asking, so I must ask as well. So it was about namaz times or the times of roza, and this student asks a question when Imam Abu Yusuf Rahmatullah is explaining the namaz times, you know, Fajr namaz time or Maghrib namaz time, sunrise, sunset, etc. So he asked the question, Hazrat, what if the sun doesn't rise, then what do I do? So such students, you have to tell them, but it's better that you keep quiet. Now, you can't reason, basic things you can't reason. When you can't reason, then it's better for you that you just remain quiet. You don't talk. So sometimes a person can't reason. Sometimes it is that he can reason, but he doesn't have basic elementary knowledge. Now, because he doesn't have basic and elementary knowledge, then therefore he's asking this type of question. Now, so much of time is consumed in explaining to him all the basic and elementary things. So it's a problem now. You are talking at one standard, at one level. Right? People are of that level of understanding. Now, because of this one individual, you have to come right down and rectify the whole thing from the top, from the bottom you have to rectify. So it's better for him that he goes to a class that is below, a standard that is below, learn the elementary things properly, correctly and sound, then he can climb up the ladder. Now he's coming into this class here, in this standard here, whereas he doesn't belong to this class. So what's happening in the process is the other students are feeling very, very miserable about it. Okay, he's talking far below our standard. Hey, this is all elementary. This is class one work. This is grade one work. And we have to listen to this because of this person here. So that person, it's better for him that this individual must be isolated. He must be brought lower. We'll learn the elementary things and then come up. See? So now you see this talk shows and radio shows and all that. This is what happens. Many a times, people that are questioning, they don't know elementary things. And when they don't know elementary things, now you have to teach them elementary things. So now the rest of the listeners are feeling miserable. Okay, this elementary thing, now this person is asking about it. He's not supposed to be asking about it. And he's asking. Like a popular question came some years ago, and again it's surfacing, again it's floating around. Aisha radiallahu anha and her marriage, what was the age, the time of her nikah, and what was the age at the time of delivery. So she was married at around the age of 7, and the delivery took place at around 9 years of age. Right? That's in all the hadith. Bukhari has also got it. Right? Now, sometimes it is malicious intent. They want to make a mockery of Islam, so they bring about this hadith. Right? And sometimes it is that man can't understand this. Because of the circumstance that he is in, he can't understand this. Why did this take place like this? So the better thing for him was that he mustn't look at the kitabs himself. That was a better thing. And if he came across this, someone explained it to him, then he must ask him, I don't understand this, can you explain that to me? Now it was a doubt, a suspicion in one person's mind, lingering in his mind. He didn't thereafter he didn't extend that doubt to the minds of others. It was in his mind. He kept it in his mind, was enough. But now, he is now voicing it on the air. When he's voicing it in the air, people that didn't have any doubts, whose minds were totally clear, now their minds become confused, they become complicated. Now they understand, they want to know why it happened, why was this? See? So, sometimes it's not good for these people to listen because their minds are not mature. Their minds are not developed. When they are not developed, they are listening to these things that are above their minds. So it creates confusion in their minds. They have doubts in their own deen, why their minds are weak. Sometimes they need attention. Sometimes they don't know primary facts. Sometimes they can't reason. Sometimes they're not mature enough. Now, for all these things, you know, it creates problems, you see. Now, the answer is very simple. See, the answer for this is very, very simple. It's not a complicated answer. Marriage is subject to need. And number two, it's subject to need and strength, right? Strength, and the third thing is responsibility. So need, strength, and responsibility. If it is that the individual has got a need, and he has got the sense of responsibility, and he's got the strength for it, then well and good. But if he doesn't have the need, or he doesn't have the strength, or he doesn't have a sense of responsibility, then he mustn't get into marriage. And with the availability, with the presence of all these three, he's got the need, he's got the strength, and he's got the sense of responsibility, then if you push this and you delay this process, what happens? Then you get a whole lot of confusion in the community. Like in any Western community, right, the time of marriage is about 20 for a girl, 20, 25, that's the time of a marriage. But every second, third girl that you go and talk to personally, she had some very, very, very bad experience, very bad experience. Every second, third girl you go and ask. And this type of experience start off from sometime from the age of 8, 9, 10, 11. The level of abuse is so much that it's beyond our understanding. And you see, one is what the statistics will tell you, that this is the level of abuse. And it's obvious that the greater percentage will not go and report these things because of their self-esteem and their self-respect. They're not going to tell you that my uncle abused me, and my brother abused me, and my so-and-so abused me. And I have in record where the brother abused, where the own cousin abused, where the uncle abuses, right? And sometimes the girl is willing to do it. Most of the case, in fact, the girl is willing to do it. She's doing all the elementary things, the things that leading up to that, she's doing. She's a voluntary partner to it. Although when it happens, then she denies. Eventually, when you interrogate her and ask her what happened and this and that, you get all the facts in place, then she was also cooperating in the whole thing. It wasn't that it was a one-sided thing. She was also getting some gifts, whatever else, and she was learning to this. She was also tempted. It's not that it was a one-sided thing. He was also doing it. See? So in most Western communities, you get this thing. So that means those women are ready. But just that community feels that they don't have the sense of responsibility. Now that is another problem. Right? It's another problem that they don't have a sense of responsibility. So why are they doing it? Here in Islam, we're saying, no, you got these things in place, then you need to be truthful to yourself. You can't be cheating yourself. You got these things in place, then you need to be truthful to yourself. I got these things in place, then I need to be in marriage. If these things are available, these things are present, then why must I delay the process? Just because people will say this and that? No. And people will say this, but when the child is going to be a subject of abuse, or the child is going to experiment something, I'm going to open up a whole court case, and then the whole child's reputation is lost, broken down. So is that the better thing? Or take life as it comes. Take life as it comes. This is something real. This is something that the child can manage. She's got the strength. She's got the stamina. And if you think she doesn't have the stamina for it, but she's got the urge for it, then you need to discipline the child. Can't look after the child. So you're not even disciplining the child. And number two, when she's exposed to all these things here, and you feel that you are being embarrassed and you've been humiliated, but then why didn't you do? One of the two things, get her married, or then correct the child. One of the two. But you're not correcting her, and you're not doing another thing as well. Now you look at so many children, and their names are appearing in the Facebook, in SMS, Mixit. All the names are appearing. And innocent, very innocent girls, very innocent boys, and the names are appearing. Now you think, no, how come it happened? How come where it happened from? How it happened? They got their photos there. How did it happen? Right. And sometimes you'll find their photos, and bad photos of the individual. It's a girl or a boy, but very, very bad, shameful photos are appearing on that. Now, all these things started off. They started off, they've got an urge, but they've not been controlled by their parents. No discipline, nothing. So sometimes that is the problem. Sometimes it is that when a Muslim is talking about this, then he is overwhelmed by Western influences, right, or the West reasons, so he's overwhelmed. He's actually suffering from an inferiority complex. You know, the Western does it like this, so we should also be doing it because the West is the standard. He is the standard, so we need to be doing and conforming to that standard. We can't go off the standard. If we do anything against the standard, then it will be a thing of disgrace. So why he's doing it is not because it is the right thing, but because he feels that the West has become his imam. The West has become the leader. So if he conforms to that standard, then he'll be right. If he doesn't conform to the standard, then he'll go off. That means he's overcome, he's overwhelmed. See? So these things you can't go and talk in the public, this type of things, you can't go and talk to the public. But then the public must just get one small thing and then they make it a public issue. Everybody goes and discusses it. See? And then it creates greater confusion in the minds of people. Then you look, this is the second point of Aisha radiallahu anha's marriage and nikah. The third point to consider in Aisha radiallahu anha's entire marriage and nikah, in Makkah as well as in Medina Munawwara, you had those people that were criticizing and opposing Rasulullah SAW all the way, every simple thing, and they would criticize, they would condemn, they would look down, everything, like Zayd ibn Harisa, when Rasulullah SAW got married to his divorced wife, right? And then they had a field day, they were talking about it, right? But you don't find one single incident where people, though they were opposition, they were enemies, they were his foes, nobody speaks against this nikah. That was an acceptable norm. In that day it was an acceptable norm. Everybody was practicing it. People had the strength, they had the urge, they had the energy for it, so it was an acceptable norm. The greatest enemy didn't speak about it. Today now they found the need to speak about this thing here. See? So you're not looking at things in context. When you don't look at things in context, then you find your mind is all going upside down, you see. So these questions come about sometimes because of immaturity. Sometimes I'm not understanding context. Sometimes it comes because you don't have the elementary knowledge. You don't have that elementary basic knowledge. Therefore you're asking this type of questions, see. And all these things boil down to the fact that mankind has got that need, he's got that urge, he's got the curiosity to explore. But the procedure of exploring, there's a procedure. You go and explore, but there's a procedure. You follow the procedure, you come back safe. But you go and explore without understanding procedure, then it can be disastrous. Like I told you about that bomb incident. I told you about that medicine incident. I told you about that. You want to explore, for example, you want to go and hunt animals, right? And just now, you can be hunted down. You're going for lions. You're going for wildebeest, right? Or you're going for these wild African buffaloes you're going for, right? And you don't know the procedure. In two minutes, they can finish you up. They can ravage you. Because you don't know the procedure. You don't know how to go for it, how to hunt it down. So you learn the procedure, then you go. You come, you went safe, and you came back safe. But now you go like a wild thing, you know, explore, adventure. So definitely you must explore, must adventure, but go with the right procedures. You go with the right procedures, you'll come back safe. You go without the right procedures, then obviously you'll come back in a miserable state, or you'll just die in the process. You may just cause a disaster for yourself. So this is the first level of ilm, that is istima, listen attentively, listen. Your mind mustn't be consumed by anything, nothing. Mind must be clean, clear, pure. It is just reserved to that. That is why in that first encounter of wahi, Rasulullah had reserved himself to that Ghar Hira, the cave of Hira. There nothing is distracting him. No sound, no person, no thing. There's nothing he can see because it's a Ghar, it's a cave. Within the cave is totally dark. So nothing is disturbing him, no sound is disturbing him, no person is disturbing him, there's nobody there. He's just to himself. It is between him and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So it's uninterrupted. And he's so as to impressing upon us that this is the first encounter of knowledge. Because at that in that whole operation, you find that knowledge started off from that point. اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق. Where it started off? It started from that point. So the individual's mind must be uninterrupted. It mustn't be consumed in anything. Right? Must be just focused in that one single thing. Now in a short duration, he acquires knowledge. And the knowledge he acquires is very sound, is very mature. He's grasped the knowledge, he's acquired the knowledge, and he's acquired it fully. It's not a half, and he left half on the way. So therefore, when Rasulullah asked him to receive wahi, then as though he wasn't with the Sahaba-i-Kiram, he's so consumed at that time. As though at that time, at that moment, he's not with the Sahaba-i-Kiram. Right? Then, when that wahi subsides, then after a moment or two, then he comes back again. So this is that first level of wahi. First level of knowledge, istima. Awwalul ilm al-istima. Then the second level of wahi, second level of ilm, what is it, the second level? Summa al-hifz. After you have learned, after you have done that, you have covered that, then you have to memorize it, you have to learn it off. Right? See, like I say, there's so many mistakes that have taken place. So many mistakes that have taken place. Just by exploring this field of education on your own, this whole country of education, this world of education, you haven't explored it on your own, and you created so much of problem. Look at a person, Ibn Lahiya, right? Generally, the muhaddithin have got something to speak about him, that he is not so reliable. Right, he's not so authentic. You know, you get some reporters of hadith that are very, very reliable, very authentic. Now him, though he had a sound memory, but in spite of that sound memory, they say he's not a very reliable narrator of hadith. Now why did they say that he was not such a sound narrator of hadith? Why wasn't he so authentic? So they say the reason for that was that he had got the kitabs from his ustads, and he was making notes on his own. He got the kitabs and he was making notes on his own. He didn't go and receive that ilm from the ustad directly. He didn't hear it from him. Right? He was reading a hadith and he says, ihtajama fi masjidihi. Ihtajama means to take cuppings. Now if someone knows about the cuppings as it was done in those early days, so it's a messy job. You're pulling out blood. The whole area will be soiled in blood. See, the whole area will be soiled in blood. Now what he says, اِحْتَجَمَ فِي مَسْجِدِهِ. Okay. Rasul Pasam did cuppings in his masjid. اِحْتَجَمَ فِي مَسْجِدِهِ. So the student asked him, that فِي مَسْجِدِهِ? He said, yes, in which masjid? No, in the masjid of Rasul Pasam. In the masjid of Rasul Pasam, he took cuppings. So now he's created such a confusion, such a problem is created. So the real thing wasn't ihtajama, it was ihtajara. Because now meem and ra are written quite similar, you see. They're written quite similar. So from ihtajama he wrote ihtajara, from ihtajara he wrote ihtajama, and he created a problem. Right? Ihtajara has got a total different meaning. Ihtajara is, you see, you've got this mats here outside, right? Those mats you got. So, in those days, those mats were smaller, right? Smaller pieces. People are reading namaz in that, right? Or, it was your own property. You got mats, and it's your own property. So, if you wanted to seclude yourself in etikaf, right? Then it wasn't like how we got it now organized and all that. So, you'll have those small mats, right? And you will partition that, you will cordon that off with the mat, and you've got your cubicle. Understand? You've got your cubicle. Ihtajara, you made a small room for yourself. But with what? With this type of mats, you made a small cubicle for yourself. So, ihtajara fi masjidihi, he had made an isolated spot for himself. He had isolated that spot for himself in his masjid. Like how we make in etikaf. Now, do you have any problem in that? Do you have any problem? Why you don't have a problem? Because you learnt it directly from an ustad, from a teacher. Rather than you going directly, accessing that thing yourself, you got it from a teacher. Now the smaller explanations, the ustad will give it to you, you can't get it yourself. See the problem that you bring upon yourself. So that knowledge wasn't a blessing for you, it actually posed as a problem for you. It wasn't a blessing any longer. But you went the wrong way. Now this thing, instead of it being a blessing, the knowledge actually is supposed to be a blessing. It's supposed to be a comfort. Provided you follow the procedure. You know, knowledge is like a person is in the darkness and he is groping in the dark. And someone brings light. So he finds a relief. He finds comfort. He finds a relief. So he can manage himself through. But he was groping in the dark. Maybe he could have fallen into a well, could have fallen into a ditch and brought problems for himself, right? But now someone brought the light, now at least he's relieved. Now, see, I can see my way, and I know the harm from the benefit. I know the good from the bad. I know the beneficial from the harmful. Why? Because he can see light. So that knowledge is that light, and the light brings about a hope, it brings some comfort, brings some ease. But when the knowledge is bringing greater confusion, you rather just pack it up and leave it aside. Because you're not meant for it, you're not cut out for it, you don't have the necessary tools. So you rather just pack it up and leave it one side. Right. Same, there's another incident that explains here about Yazid ibn Harun. He's also a famous muhaddis. See? So he's explaining one hadith, حَدَّسَنِي فُلَانٌ عَنْ إِذَةٍ. So, the student is asking, إِذَا إِبْنَ مَنْ. إِذَا إِبْنَ مَنْ. إِذَا, in other words, you're talking of, you're saying إِذَا, that's the name. So, إِذَا, whose son is إِذَا? Whose son is إِذَا now? I want to know that. So, really, إِذَا actually means, I have learned this hadith from several people. That's the meaning of Ida. Now the student took it, he mistook it for a name. Whereas Ida refers to, I've heard this from several muhaddiseen. And what he took it for? He took it for a name of an individual. So he's asking, Ida, whose son is Ida? See the mistake. Now where this mistake starts from? Where it starts off from? What's the source? Where it started off from? It started from this point. Now that's a mistake from the hadith. I showed you mistakes from the Quran, mistakes from the hadith, right? And these mistakes were just in the reporters, you know, the reporters, the names of the reporter. Now look into the wording of the hadith. One hadith, Rasulullah ﷺ explains about that person is a lucky person, he's a fortunate person, that he doesn't have a lot of wealth, and he's not very popular, he's not very well known, and he engages in ibadat, and thereafter, summa naqada. Summa naqada. Naqada is to toss a coin. Naqada means to toss a coin, right? So now, the one that is listening to the hadith for the first time, he's going to be really, really puzzled. Okay, what does this hadith refer to? Okay, he doesn't have a lot of wealth, and number two, he doesn't have a lot of acquaintances. He's reserved himself for ibadat. He's got some ibadat for himself. And then he tossed the coin. So how does it relate? He tossed the coin and he didn't have too many acquaintances. So how does he become fortunate? He must toss the coin, he become fortunate, what? So he's confused. Summa naqada, he's confused now. He doesn't know how it relates. Right? So naqada actually is a thing that they used to use. In the old days, this is what they used to do, because the currency was either of gold and silver, right? Now someone is coming with a fake currency. Currency that is fake. It's appearing to be gold, but it's not gold. It's appearing to be silver, but it's not silver. Now, the one that is receiving the money, how will he make out that this is genuine gold or it is fake? It is imitation. How is he going to make out? So how they should make out is they should toss the coin. They toss it, and in the tossing you get a certain sound. You get the sun and you can, oh, this is genuine gold. And this is genuine imitation. So they make it out in that way. Today also they got some other procedures of finding out. In those days this was the procedure that they would make out that this is genuine or imitation. Right? Summa naqada. Right? So what Rasulullah was saying here is he doesn't have a lot of wealth and he doesn't have a lot of acquaintances. And then he slipped away from this world, in other words. Like I said, he slipped away, he moved away from this world. In other words, he moved away and there weren't many people mourning over him. You know, he just sneaked away. There weren't many people just mourning over him. So that person is fortunate. Right? So now this was the Rasulullah saying. But now because you don't understand how this thing fits, you don't understand the context of that day, so you bring about a confusion in your mind. Okay, what is Rasulullah saying here? You try to make some philosophical meaning. This is another problem. Some will add some philosophy. Some very strange philosophy they will bring to hadith or to the Quranic verses. Whereas it was a simple thing for everybody to understand. Now you bring about some very weird philosophy into this whole equation, make it more complicated. It was complicated, and now you make it more complicated. So where this thing again stemmed up from? That you didn't have a teacher. Right? So, summa naqada. You see that the problem that you bring about and where this thing starts off. Similarly, comes in the hadith, aqada tis'een. Right? This aqada tis'een perhaps comes in the hadith of Ya'juj Ma'juj. You know? The hadith says that min radmi Ya'juj Ma'juj, that wall of Ya'juj Ma'juj, so much has opened out. So much has opened out. So when you, in Arabic, when you put the index finger and the thumb together, so this denotes 30. See, they call it Aqda Anamil. That how you count your, you know, after tasbih, after namaz, you count the tasbih on your fingers, right? Like you say 1, 2, 3, you count it like that, right? So this is now denoting 90 or 30 out of 80, right? But generally when you speak, they say, hey, just give me a small break. You know, how you put your finger? You're going to show something very small. Hey, just a small last break, man. Small break. And I'll come back. Hey, I'll come back just in 2 minutes, man. But how you express yourself at that time, you express yourself in this way. Now, the person that doesn't know about this, he says, now, what's 90 to do with this whole equation? I'll give on philosophy, you know, 90, whether it is before Christ or after Christ, one day refers to one year, or one day refers to 90 means 90,000 years. So 90, so one 90 now it refers to 90,000. So then, when it refers to 90,000 or 9,000, so there's 9,000 years before Qiyamah. All some philosophical meaning they'll bring and make a whole kachumar of this whole thing. They'll all make a kachumar of this thing here. Then, like I said, their minds are already confused. They bring about a greater confusion into their minds. So the simple thing is, by I don't know the hadith, and I'm not licensed to go and see this hadith myself. So go to that person who's licensed to see the hadith. He will give you a better explanation. Like we spoke about Hasan ibn Manda. And he went to so many people from here, there, 40 years he went to just acquire the hadith. Now, if you got the urge and all that, go and take the pains and go and learn it from the experts, you won't cause a problem, you won't cause a confusion for yourself, nor will you cause a confusion for others. But now you got the urge, but you're not following procedure. When you're not following procedure, you're going to bring about a problem. So that's what I say, for better for you, but leave all those books. Keep it aside. You got a problem, you want to know Zohar Namaz got 4 rakats or 5 rakats, just go and find out from Mulana and carry on. And if you got that urge, then follow the procedure. Go to the experts. Then you won't have a problem, inshallah. See, that's why the hadith says it very clearly, that إِنَّ هَذَا الْعِلْمَ دِينُكُمْ فَانْزُرُوا أَمَّنْ تَأْخُذُونَ دِينَكُمْ. That this knowledge is your deen. This knowledge is your deen. So when it's your deen, then see before you leap, you know, before you leap into knowledge, then go and see the person first. You just went into a madrasa, just went to any person that you thought he was educated. He knew he could speak a little bit of Arabic or he could write some Arabic, and you went to acquire knowledge from him. So don't be so hasty in that. You saw someone talking Arabic very fluent and ya akhi and all that, you know. So you got impressed, says akhi, akhi. And then you became the ukhti and he became the akhi and all that. Then you have problems afterwards. So you don't just go and make everybody your akhi. You take it gently, go calmly. Go and investigate that akhi is really akhi or not akhi. Before you can leap into that direction, go and see that akhi properly. Whether he has it or not, or he's lost it himself. He is posing as an akhi, and he may not be an akhi. Right? So go and investigate it properly. Properly go and see that person now. Because it's a serious thing. Deen is not a plaything. Knowledge is not a plaything, it's your deen. And deen is what you're living for. When you're living for deen, so you better go and see it properly what it is. Right? When you've investigated it, you've seen it properly, and you seen and inspected it from all sides, now you go for it. فَانْزُرُوا أَمَّنْ تَأْخُزُونَ دِينَ. Now you won't have a problem. But you just went, anybody you saw, no, the radio knows about Islam, the pamphlet knows about Islam, and this media knows about Islam, and this internet knows about Islam, so let me go and link up with them. So this is where this whole confusion is coming about. And then the more we know that this is the reason for the confusion, the more we are linking up to the radio, to all these things, more we are bringing more confusion to ourselves. Now this is the right explanation. And the other explanation is, unzur ila ma qal, wala tanzur ila man qal. That's not right. It's not supposed to be generalized. See? It's not supposed to be generalized. This is for a person who's already an expert. He's already an expert. He knows now. He knows it very well. So when he knows it very well, then you can say him, alright, unzur ila ma qal. See what he's talking about. Don't look at the individual himself so much, because you know it very well. So you know the good points, you know the weak points, you know how serious the statement is, you know it in context. When you know it in context, then unzur ila ma qal. But you don't know in context, you don't have that acquaintance with knowledge, then this is what is applicable to you in hazal ilma deenukum. Let's go.
We will discuss some of the adab of sleeping, that when going to sleep one should try to be in the state of wudu, then perform miswak before going to bed, and then one should ensure that all the doors in the home are closed and all the windows, etc., the lights.
What's all the doors? The entrance. All the doors, because the toilet door, the door. Very fine. Find one thing, where to stretch it. This door is closed. Kitchen door is closed. Pantry door is closed.
Ensure the entrances are closed. Entrances and exits are closed. The lights are switched off. For example, the candle which is burning, etc. The containers, etc. They are covered as well. Then once a person goes to bed, then he should dust his bed. And when lying down, lie down on the right side, placing your right hand under your right cheek. Then it was also the habit of Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam at times to apply surma when going to sleep. And if a person doesn't have any dini work or any necessary work after Isha, then immediately he should go off to sleep. He should not engage in any unnecessary talk or any layani or things that are not necessary. Then one should recite Tasbih Fatimi before sleeping. Three times Subhanallah, 33 times Alhamdulillah, and Allahu Akbar. Thereafter a person should also try to read the three Qul Huwa Allah, Surah Ikhlas, and the Mu'awwazatain, and blow it on his hands, and then rub it over his entire body as a form of protection. And also a person should try to read Ayatul Kursi when going to sleep, and then recite the Masnoon Du'as, Rabbi Qini Adabaka Yawma Tab'athu Ibadaka, Allahumma Bismika Amutu Wa Ahya, etc. And then a person should go off to sleep. A person cannot sleep on his right side, and then he should try to sleep on his left side, or a person can sleep on the back, but the hadith prohibits us from sleeping on the stomach. A person should not sleep on his stomach. Then when the clothing that a person wears when sleeping, that also should be such clothing that covers the private area. A person should not just merely sleep in clothing that are very thin or clothing that exposes his satr in his private area. And if, for example, a person is wearing a lungi, then a person should know correctly how to sleep with the lungi, because many a times a person does not know how to correctly sleep with it, and in the sleep his satr is uncovered. And also a person should not try to sleep or should not sleep unnecessarily after Asr or after Maghrib, unless a person is very tired and he needs to sleep, then a person will be allowed to do so. Then a person should see where he is sleeping. He should not be sleeping in areas where people walk or the entrances of a masjid, etc., thereby causing taklif to people. And upon awakening, one should recite the masnoon dua, Alhamdulillahilladhi ahyana ba'dama amatana wa ilayhi nushur. And then a person, if he has the need to relieve himself, should go and relieve himself. And if while sleeping a person experiences a good dream, then he should say Alhamdulillah, praise Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And if he wants to relate it, then he should relate it to someone who he has confidence in, and not someone who will go and divulge it to others. And if a person experiences a bad dream, then he should turn to his left side, recite ta'awuz, a'udhu billah, and spit 3 times, do as if he is spitting, and then he should continue with his sleep.
Spit on the left side.
Spit on his left side, and he should recite the ta'awuz.